everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's January 2024, and you're listening to episode 375, which is a conversation about the Satanic Temple's abortion clinic. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. John Ferrer, who is a content creator for Cross-Examined Ministries and a teaching fellow with the Equal Rights Institute. John has an MDiv in apologetics and a THM and a PhD in ethics and philosophy of religion. He's also married to Christian apologist Hilary Ferrer of Mama Bear Apologetics. John has written an online feature article, and his article is called The Satanic Temple Abortion Clinic, A Critical Assessment. You can read his article exclusively online for free at our website, equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. John, it's great to have you back on the podcast.
Good to be here.
Well, as I mentioned, we are going to be talking today about the Satanic Temple's new abortion clinic. But before we get started on that, I thought it would be interesting to talk about this development with their organization. And newer listeners might not know that John has done several articles for us about them and, you know, on adjacent things like the performance at the Grammy with the Satanic theme. You can look these up at our website. And also the documentary that kind of brought the Satanic Temple activity to our attention, which was several years ago, and it was called Hail Satan. So all of that's on our website, and John has been covering some of the angles for Satanists for us. But the reason why we're covering this particular topic at this time of year in January is that the third Sunday of the month has been designated as National Sanctity of Human Life Day, and that was actually done by then President Ronald Reagan back in 1984. And that was actually way back when. It was only the 11th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. So a lot of things have happened since the start of the National Sanctity of Human Life Day on the third Sunday of the month. So we thought we'd talk about the issue of abortion because that's what kind of started out to answer with this National Sanctity of Life Day. And so, as I said, the Satanic Temple opened up this abortion clinic. So tell us a little bit about the name of this clinic, which I find to be extremely, not just irreverent, but just, you know, profane, actually, and how they decided to name their clinic with that particular title.
Yeah, so the Satanic Temple has been on the abortion debate radar since their early days. They've had a history of staging very theatrical protests, always on the pro-choice side. They're definitely pro-choice in their positioning. But it looks like with the recent Dobbs decision in 2022, that's Dobbs v. Jackson, Supreme Court, they struck down Roe v. Wade and subsequent cases that presuppose Roe v. Wade. And the result was it created a lot of cultural chaos as folks were trying to sort out, well, what are abortion rights? Where do we stand? Are women going to be denied abortion access? Are doctors going to be denying them life-saving care because they're not allowed these abortions and therapeutic abortion and whatnot? And so there was a lot of cultural disorientation following that decision. And I think that created an opportunity for folks on the left to rally politically and create this abortion wave to counteract the foreseen red wave in prior elections. Well, one of the outworkings of that is the Satanic Temple was able to take their pro-choice patterning from the past and aim it at filling a service void potentially left by states that are restricting abortion services. So if someone is in Texas and maybe they've got a friend in New Mexico and they want to go visit them, they could perhaps get an abortion in as a claimed New Mexico resident, quote unquote, legally through an abortion clinic. So what the temple did is they opened a mail order pill abortion clinic. So they mail these pill abortions, mifepristone and misoprostol. So it's a two-pill combination. They mail them to people who request them, along with instructions on how to do these satanic ritual abortions. And the, of course, never missing an opportunity to poke and jab at the establishment, the mainstream conservative establishment, they named the clinic the Samuel Alito's Mom's Satanic Abortion Clinic. So you can picture Samuel Alito's Mom's Satanic Abortion Clinic. And they even advertise it with this little cartoon panel that has an old lady who's presumably Sam Alito's mom saying, if only they had abortion services back when she was pregnant with Samuel Alito, which, if you didn't know, Samuel Alito was the Supreme Court justice who penned the majority decision in the Dobbs case. So he is the name most tied to that bit of legal history in overturning Roe v. Wade. So this was obviously a troll move, jabbing at Samuel Alito, kind of wishing him dead, and then connecting Samuel Alito and Satanism in the same title so that it just rubs every pro-lifer the wrong way. But that's kind of how they have worked throughout their history. They will use names, they'll use terminology, they'll use publicity to agitate and to create irritation among conservatives and their political opponents till some of us lash out. And then they faint on it and cry foul. And they're legally very savvy. They know how to leverage a lawsuit. They know how to use their lawyers. And so that's kind of the strategy. And this is one of those that can serve a couple different purposes. But it seems the main reason that they would have launched this is, in their view, to fill a service void now that states are allowed to restrict and abolish elective abortion.
Before I ask you a little bit more about their abortion clinic, I want to back up a little bit because I mentioned that some of our listeners might be new and not know that you have covered Satanism and specifically the Satanic Temple for us before. So can you remind our listeners who is the Satanic Temple? And what are their beliefs? Because I think when you say Satanic Temple, people think, is this a kind of church where they gather regularly to worship Satan?
Yeah. So the Satanic Temple was started fairly recently. I don't think they're even 20 years old at this point, or they're just barely. But they didn't attain official religious status as recognized as a recognized religion for tax-exempt purposes until, I believe, 2019. They're fairly new to the game here. Before then, they were still operating, but they were going through the legal processes and whatnot. And this religious status allows them a kind of leverage that they can use to advance their ideals, which their ideals are basically what you would expect at the intersection of progressive politics and new atheism. So if you're not familiar with the term new atheism, that's a kind of militant, snarky, aggressive, cocky kind of atheism that was birthed with the four horsemen of atheism, the Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, Sam Harris, and Daniel Dennett, the four horsemen of the new atheist apocalypse. So that brand of new atheism has kind of waned in recent years. They were coming off a little too arrogant and rude and just culturally and aesthetically, it just wasn't as appealing to people all that much. But it didn't go away entirely. Well, when you intersect that with progressive politics and you say, hey, I'm a new atheist or I sympathize with new atheists and I want to agitate and I want to agitate in a progressive direction. Well, these folks, the Satanic Temple, they offer a set of ideals that really line up with most of what I affirm. And so people at that intersection are easily led down that road. And that's the Satanic Temple. It is largely a left-wing activist organization. It is atheist. It is technically religious, but don't expect them to worship a personal, embodied, literal Satan. They don't believe in a literal Satan. They don't believe in a literal God. They are atheists. But they leverage their religious status for tax-exempt purposes and for religious freedom causes at a legal judicial level.
Getting back to the specific abortion clinic, besides the fact that it's affiliated with the Satanic Temple, Is this particular clinic any different from, you know, just the standard abortion clinic or the Planned Parenthood abortion clinic or anything like that?
Yeah, the big differences are it's based states away from where it's actually occurring. So the Satanic Temple is based out of Salem, Massachusetts, and they're partnering with pharmacies in New Mexico. And I believe that is the legally identified location of this clinic. But don't think of it as a brick and mortar clinic. It's entirely a mail order clinic that partners with a pharmacy in New Mexico, because New Mexico has a great deal of pro-choice policy in place that would protect this kind of practice. So they do this out of New Mexico. They have named it in a very provocative way after Samuel Alito's mom, just a homage to irritate the right-wing conservatives with just the very existence of this place. And because it's mail order, that means they can't offer surgical abortions. It's only chemical abortions, or what's known as pill abortion. And that limits the services that they can offer. But because it's a potentially streamlined operation, they can minimize their overhead and what it costs to operate this institute. It does potentially have ramifications, which I'm sure we'll get to, regarding health and safety and clinical requirements, because it's not affiliated with a, you know, brick and mortar clinic. So if there are going to be, quote, clinical visits, they would have to be Zoom, or they would rely on self-reporting, or have certain limitations that potentially pose threats when a woman tries to go through with her pill abortion. But there's another element that they infuse into this clinic model that they have to utilize their religious freedom to the fullest effect. They declare it as a religious right to abortion. And then to qualify these abortion services as a religious right, they have to be satanic ritual abortions. That means for them, there has to be at least some framing of the provided abortion that ties it into some kind of religious ritual practice. Now, I'm sure they phrase it that way so that folks on the outside would say, oh, they're sacrificing babies to Satan. And technically, I think they are. But I don't think they think that. That's not what they're aiming at. They don't believe in a literal Satan. They think they are creating something of a counseling, self-help, coaching, encouragement type of ritualized process that goes along with their taking the abortion pills. They would take the mifepristone on the clinic day visit, whatever that would translate into. And then 2 days later, they would take misoprostol. The first one stops progesterone, which is the chemical that keeps the baby growing. So basically, this fetal human dies in utero if allowed the full 48 to 72 hours of effect. And then they take the second pill, which induces labor, but it induces entirely well before the viability. So the idea is it kills and then expels. But that can be a very traumatizing thing for the woman. So what the Satanic Temple does to kind of process some of that, and potentially the shame and the fear and the self-loathing that can tie into it because of it, the trauma involved, it's a very counseling-based type of self-help coaching ritual that they offer. Don't think of it as, you know, smearing blood in honor of Satan. It's more like a self-help counseling session.
The big news for this week is that the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal has launched a brand new podcast in 2024, and this podcast is called Christian Research Journal Reads. Please go to your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to it. And what it is, it will be presenting audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. We have a deep well to choose from. Of course, as you know, we had an incarnation as a print magazine for almost 45 years, and now we are exclusively online and continuing, as you know, when you listen to this podcast, to bring you brand new articles every single week and interview those authors. And now we are taking some of our most popular and most accessed articles that are online and making them into an audio version. And honestly, we've got thousands of articles to choose from over the years. So we hope that these audio articles will help you not only to proclaim and defend your faith, but as a disciple of Jesus Christ, help you to draw closer to him in your walk with him. So all of these articles that you can go and back and reference after you've listened to an audio version are completely free at our website, equip.org. And we hope that you will share these audio articles from Christian Research Journal Reads podcast widely on all your social media accounts, or text a friend or email a friend, or just tell a friend about the podcast, because some of our articles, as you know, are quite in depth. And so some people prefer to just listen to them, maybe on their commute to work or while they're working out, or maybe while you're cooking dinner or folding laundry, something like that. Whenever you listen to your favorite podcasts, please add in Christian Research Journal Reads, again, everywhere you find your favorite podcast. And we hope that you will enjoy all of these offerings. And we are coming up to release a few of them all at once at the same time. If you have been subscribing to the Christian Research Journal, you will be excited to know that there's audio versions. But also, if you subscribe to this podcast, Postmodern Realities, you might have seen one or two of these articles. We were just testing them out to see if people would enjoy them, and they are finding some popularity also on our YouTube channel, which is Bible Answer Man, if you want to go there as well. So we hope you enjoy Christian Research Journal Reads. And now back to the podcast with John Ferrer. Well, one thing that you kind of do a little bit in your article is you write about trolling, and you are accusing the Satanic Temple of trolling. So first of all, I'd like you to define trolling, because maybe not all of our listeners know what that term means. And what do you mean by that when you are saying that the Satanic Temple in particular is trolling? I mean, who are they trolling, and what would be the point of that? But first, I think not everyone's familiar with that slang term to troll someone.
Well, trolling is this practice that came into fashion with the social media world. I'm sure some form of it existed apart from that name from long ago. But in the social media world, when someone chimes in and says something very satirical or sarcastic, and it's supposed to get a rise out of you, it's supposed to agitate you and get you off your guard, that's trolling. Now, there's a whole art to it nowadays. There's some very sophisticated trolling. And I dare say when I use the term as an accusation towards the Satanic Temple, I don't mean to suggest that they're not serious about the subjects that they're trolling on. I think they're very serious about it. I think trolling is for them more of an agitational methodology that's supposed to incite a response from Christian conservatives, pro-lifers, folks that revel in the privilege of being part of the majority religion and all the social privilege that comes with that. So, for example, people generally wouldn't bat an eyelash if you had an after-school Bible club at a public school, as long as, you know, students got the charter, there's a faculty sponsor. That would normally be within the range of religious freedom. But as soon as the Satanic Temple tries to do the same thing, then you can get a whole community up in arms over that. And that's kind of the game. That's how it works, is to take what is the normal range of privilege that religious freedom offers for the majority religion and make sure that it is also extended to the minority religion, which for them is Satanism. But for trolling, this is, I would say they have made an art out of it. It is a methodology for them more so than just an accident. It's not something they've done once or twice. It's kind of how they go about doing everything they've been doing. Find a way to take some progressive ideological point of activism and frame it in a way that's poking the beast, that's poking the bear, the lumbering, sleeping bear of Christian conservatism, and agitate them till they lash out and do something that encroaches on your rights. And then you fall back, you sue, or you just call them out on it, and you win the publicity war that way. So they are very publicly discerning. They are very publicity savvy about this. And so when I say trolling, I don't actually mean that as an insult, though it's often used that way. I mean it more as a description of their manner of Saul Alinsky style agitational agitprop. This is what they do to get you upset at them. So you do something, and then they have been empowered by you legally and politically. And you can accidentally help further their cause by spreading lies about them, and they'll point out how you're lying about them, and then you can get in trouble. Because people, for example, might assume that they worship a literal Satan, or that they aren't atheists, or that they're talking about blood smearing child sacrifices when they talk about ritual abortion. So you say those kinds of things about them honestly, or meaning it, and they can clap back and use your attacks on them against you, judo style.
So you describe them as a group that are atheistic and they don't believe in a literal Satan, but are there other kinds of Satanists besides those who are affiliated with the Satanic Temple? And, you know, it's like, I guess, is their name another trolling thing to say they're Satanists since they don't actually believe in Satan? But at this point, are they, when people think of Satanists because of their documentary and everything else, do you think they're really, and you just mentioned publicity, are they really more the public face of Satanism than perhaps maybe some other types of Satanism?
Well, they've definitely positioned themselves to be more or less the most public face of Satanism out there. Probably disproportionately representing Satanism compared to their actual numbers. Now, I'm willing to guess that they've been growing and gaining numbers over the last few years because their conventions have been gaining numbers. So that suggests that they're growing. But Satanism as a larger historic phenomenon is multifaceted. You've got Luciferians, which is kind of alternate history account of biblical Christianity, saying Christians are the bad guys and they follow Lucifer as the good guy who is kicked out and oppressed. And it's an underdog story read into the Christian account. You've also got Order of the Nine Angels, which is chaos intensive. Picture the darkest black metal and the most, how can I describe it? Picture what it looks like if someone actually believed all the lyrics from black metal. And that's kind of what you get with the Order of the Nine Angels. Just very dark, very chaos, infatuated, just driven by wanting to see everything burn. That some people just want to see the world burn, that kind of thing. So Order of the Nine Angels is actually on terrorist watch lists, but they're self-identified Satanists, and they will root for Hitler or Hamas or any bad guys who are creating terror, killing, causing harm, causing chaos, because they see that as sort of the fires of the phoenix from which something more beautiful will emerge, but you got to burn it all down first. That's kind of Order of the Nine Angels. But there's others, and to various degrees, some of the black magic fields, Thelema and different sorts like that. But probably the most common brand of Satanism besides the Satanic Temple would be LaVeyan Satanism after Anton LaVey. They call themselves the Church of Satan. And there's still offshoots of that as well. Satan or Satanism. I don't know that they love that term. I think they have a different name for themselves, but frankly, I'm not schooled up enough to know exactly what they prefer to be identified as. But they recognize Set as Satan, and that's the personal demigod that they follow. So not all the brands of Satanism that exist today follow the atheism of the Satanic Temple, and not all of them reject magic like the Satanic Temple does. Many of them are very immersed in black magic, leftfold theology, not just ideology, and this way of doing things different. Like Christianity refers to righteousness all the time, on the right, being on the right. Jesus is at the right hand of the Father. Well, the leftfold path is the antithesis of that. It's trying to be intentionally subversive, transgressive, and doing that not just because of a rebel spirit, although that's part of it, but because it's seen as a way of different kind of enlightenment and wisdom that folks on the right, who are just a bunch of squares, they're missing out on this. So they follow the leftfold path. And probably the leftfold path is the the most unifying element that brings all these different brands of Satanism together is that it's that left fold path. And even those that don't ascribe to black magic or any kind of magic, they still hold to a view of that left fold path that kind of gives them a working identity, a sense of purpose. But yeah, the Satanic Temple doesn't represent all of modern Satanism. They might, however, be the most prominent publicity hounds who are technically satanic.
So just, you know, this is specifically about their abortion clinic, but I mean, why would they even get involved in having an abortion clinic and offering abortion services? I mean, why would they be interested in the abortion debate?
Well, they hold to a couple tenets that align them with the pro-choice stance. They affirm bodily autonomy in a very strong sense of the word. And as you're probably very aware, my body, my choice is a mantra of the pro-choice left. That's right at the heart of what they believe. They also encourage compassion and empathy. They would see abortion choice services as offering compassion and empathy to women who are down on their luck in a hard spot. They got pregnant and it was unplanned and now they don't have any options available. They see abortion as the compassionate solution for those kinds of women. And so they see it as a pro-woman type of thing to be pro-choice. I think the facts ultimately weigh against that position, but that's how they understand it. So they encourage empathy, compassion, they're pro-woman, they affirm bodily autonomy, but they're also very pro-science, or at least that's what they claim. I haven't really tested that claim all that much myself, but I think they do run into some challenges with pill abortion and this abortion clinic when it comes to trying to be empathetic, pro-woman, compassionate, and pro-science, because I believe the best evidence out there suggests that pill abortion multiplies harms for women and creates all sorts of problems to where it's ultimately not very compassionate to women to be encouraging them and kicking down all the doors that were keeping them from raising all their risks in the form of pill abortion. It's just the complexity of compassion. Informed, wise compassion can go a lot farther than just naive compassion in terms of helping and blessing people. And I think what they represent, although they're trying to be empathetic and compassionate towards women, I think they represent a misinformed or underinformed brand of it. And it's going to be putting women at risk.
So you've already mentioned that the Satanic Temple's abortion clinic really focuses on like morning, what's known as morning after kind of pills. So medical, not like in a person where they're performing a procedure on the woman itself, but some pills that she can take at home to have that kind of abortion, you know, in the privacy of her own home is how it's usually characterized. And so why are they doing that? And why did they not decide to set up an actual physical clinic where people could come in for an abortion? And what kind of challenges do you think that they're going to face with having this particular, almost kind of like a virtual abortion clinic where, you know, you don't have to be in the state where that provides the medications. You can just be able to order it from them and perform this, you know, medical abortion with pills, you know, at your own house.
So I think there's this going myth in the pro-choice world that the abortion pill, and it's technically pills because there's at least two different medicines used here. And I'm not talking about the morning after pill. That's a little different. Potentially, if the morning after pill works as it's supposed to, it will prevent conception. It's technically intended originally as a pre-abortion conception prevention method. But there's an ambiguity there to where it's still kind of an abortion pill, but it's a different one than what we're talking about here. The morning after pill is supposed to prevent conception, but if it fails at that, it can create a hostile environment in the woman's body so that even if she were to conceive within just a few hours after intercourse, the woman's body is so hostile to that embryo that it just passes through and she has a very early miscarriage. But there's about a two-week window where she may or may not be pregnant, depending on how long the conception process takes. There's about a two-week window, and medically, it's inconsistently labeled as to whether she's pregnant or not in that 2-week window. Developmental staging is usually dated from the end of that 2-week window, but technically she could have conceived by the front of that 2-week window. But what that means is you've got a woman who could be with child already in the early stages of it, and she takes a pill that kills that child in utero, and it's technically not called an abortion. But it's a technicality. Ethically, realistically, it's still an abortion. So that's the morning after pill. That's not quite the services we're talking about, though I wouldn't put it past the Satanic Temple to move in that direction too, because it fits easily with their model of mail order abortions. So here the big myth, I think, for the pro-choice world, getting back to what I was saying earlier, is that the abortion pill regimen is some panacea. It's the DIY abortion service that everybody's been waiting for. You've been wanting to fully have sexual relations entirely on your terms, freed up from any long-term serious consequences unless you choose those consequences. So you have the choice for sex, and then you have a choice for any consequences from that sex. Potentially, the pill is supposed to offer all of that. But what we find is that this pill regimen creates up to 4 times as many health risks and dangers compared to surgical abortion. Now, folks may be surprised at that because the pill regimen is supposed to be for early pregnancy. And originally, when it was released on the market in the U.S. in the early 2000s, it was developed in Mifepristone was developed in like 1987 in France, and it was used some there, but it made it through FDA regulations in the early to mid 2000s in the US. And then later, I believe it was like 2016 or so, they included another pill with it, Misoprostol. But Mifeprex, what it does is it blocks progesterone, which is what makes the baby grow. And so the baby dies in utero. And if it's before 7 weeks, in theory, what will happen is she can just miscarry, just as miscarriages often do happen, because the developing child in utero is so small that it can just pass through. He or she can just pass through. But they had to extend that because of pressures, because folks wanted an abortion pill and they were willing to press the boundaries of it. And so I believe it was 2016 or 2017 that the FDA approved it through week 10 if they accompany it with Misoprostol, which induces delivery. But what also happens with this is not only does it block the progesterone, which is blocking a natural chemical in the body, which can have its own consequences, but by adding this additional element that induces delivery at 10 weeks, you have another serious complicating factor, because between those two pills, you have vasodilation, which means your blood vessels get bigger so they can pump more blood. You also have effects similar to a blood thinner, which means effectively you're more likely to bleed out. If you start to have some blood loss, you're more likely to bleed out than if you had normal clotting functions without these blood thinning effects from these medicines. And so you have serious medical complications that are more likely to happen when you combine these two medications. And even without the one medication, without the Misoprostol, Mifeprex is still tampering with the body, and it still can create the scenario where she could not fully expel the aborted fetus. Actually, it's aborted embryo if it's before 8 weeks. It would expel this child in utero, but if she doesn't expel it entirely, then those remains can damage her interior and create infection. And so add it all up, and what you have is higher risk of significant bleeding. There's already supposed to be serious cramping, but the cramping is especially problematic because it's not at a stage in her gestation when the body is physically conditioned to be able to undergo induced delivery. It's entirely before that. And so this is a very unnatural thing. And so the cramping can get is expected to be severe, but how do you know how severe is too severe? How do you know how much bleeding is too much bleeding? And so combine that with the fact that this is presented as a DIY fix where women can be secretive, anonymous, and have an abortion without anybody else knowing. Well, you know what you have to do if you're going to have an abortion without anybody else knowing. You're going to have to not have anybody in the room with you, or no one else knows what's going on. And so all sorts of women are liable to take the abortion pills under the delusion that they can have anonymity, secrecy, privacy. And what happens when they start to bleed a bit too much, or they start to feel severe cramping and they don't know if this is normal? Well, they need to get themselves to the ER. Well, if they talk themselves into it and decide to go to the ER, if they don't have anybody else with them, which is a strong possibility because it's a secretive thing, they're driving themselves to the ER. Now, let's suppose that they make it to the ER and don't bleed out or pass out in the taxi or something like that. Let's assume that doesn't happen and they get to the ER. The time it took to get from, you know, their bathroom at home to the ER is you know, minutes, perhaps hours, when seconds can count. If you're starting to bleed out and you're not clotting right, that's a very dangerous position to be in. So you've lost time there at a very critical point. And then let's say you get admitted. There's no requirement that these women must say, I was trying to have an abortion and it's not going right. They can just report it as, I think I'm miscarrying my baby. Because there's no abortion reporting requirements in the U.S. for individuals. You don't have to report it. And then several states don't even report them to any federal hub. And so a lot of these pregnancy complications that are chalked up as miscarriage or maternal mortality rate statistics, they're actually tracing to these, to at-home or secretive abortions or just other surgical abortion complications when they sent them to the ER and said, don't tell them you had an abortion. Sometimes they're secretive because of shame. They just don't want to admit it. Sometimes they're concerned about medical records that could get out and they want it to stay private. Other times they're concerned about health insurance coding and will it be covered if it's an attempted abortion versus just a miscarriage in my pregnancy. And so all of these things mean that this complication is liable to, or at least there's a strong chance, that it gets misreported as a pregnancy complication. Now, anytime you see stats and studies evaluating the overall health risks of pill abortion, unless they are accounting for that significant threat of statistical misdiagnosis or misapplication, just bad stats, if they're not accounting for that, then you're getting bogus numbers. And what we find is when you correct for those statistical miscalculations, the abortion pill ends up being as much as 4 times more risky for women than even surgical abortion. And when you correct for those same kinds of reporting errors as they translate into surgical abortion, abortion is 2 to 3 times more likely to cause severe clinical problems for women, including death. It's about 2 to 3 times more dangerous for women, that is surgical abortion, compared to pregnancy. Now, most people wouldn't know that pill abortion is more dangerous than surgical abortion, and surgical and in-pill abortion are more dangerous than delivery. But most people haven't really dug into it that well. And so abortion choice rhetoric, abortion choice advocacy, I think hinges in large part on bad stats. Now, you can find studies that will do the gymnastics to prove what you want to prove. But what we find is when you correct against those kinds of variables that tamper with the numbers, abortion, especially pill abortion, is very dangerous for women. And it's not very pro-woman to encourage them into an avenue that's going to raise their risks 4 times or 3 times more than they would have had otherwise.
So they particularly call their abortion services, you know, quote, satanic temples, religious ritual abortions. I don't know if that's more of the trolling and snark taking place there, but by calling it that, what are they trying to say by saying they're, quote, ritual abortions?
Well, I think the surface answer to explain that, the simplest answer is that this is a way to try to protect this service as a religious right, so that if it should go to court, they've got a bit more legal protection for these services. And I think they kind of have their fingers crossed and are hoping for some legal challenge in a pro-life state where a woman, say she's got parents in Texas and in New Mexico, and she could claim that she lives in either state depending on what day of the week it is or something like that. And she gets an abortion in New Mexico, but she lives in Texas. And let's say Texas law, which has the six-week heartbeat ban, heartbeat bill, and then New Mexico, which has a much more liberal pro-choice policy. Let's say a Texas lawyer were to challenge her on that. If she were to say, well, I identify as a Satanist with the Satanic Temple and my abortion is a religious right, well, now you're talking a new judicial landscape for how the abortion argument develops. And I think they kind of had their fingers crossed hoping for that kind of a challenge. I don't quite know how to predict how that will turn out, because they were only formally recognized as a religion as of 2019. So it might look more like opportunism rather than a deeply held principled position. It might be just too recent to get much respect legally. Plus, they do run the big risk of just really bad optics. Because from a pro-life Christian perspective, abortion is sacrificing children to Satan. And they might be stepping on that rake of their own making, just embracing it by calling their advocacy for abortion choice a religious ritual for Satanism. I kind of agree with them. Now, they don't believe they're sacrificing children to a literal Satan, but I do. And I don't mean that in any insulting or degrading way. I just believe that there's a literal Satan, and I believe that there are literal demons. And that kind of behavior really, it crosses the line in so many different ways, obviously. But I think they've gone a step too far to where their trolling tactics might boomerang and cause more harm for their aim than they intend. Because it's not like the pro-choice world, which includes a lot of moderates, can openly and confidently walk right beside these folks arm in arm and say, yeah, we support ritual satanic abortion. They don't want any affiliation with Satanism, because that's been a long objection from the religious right that Satanism is resurrected Molech worship, which is basically offering children sacrificially to Molech, who is, if you don't know, that could be another name for Satan, according to Levian beliefs. So basically, this is really bad optics where they're stepping on a rake, inviting the accusation that you're sacrificing babies to Satan. They don't believe in a literal Satan, but you don't have to believe in Satan to still be in his service. You don't have to believe that there is a physical or a literal or an embodied demigod known as Satan. You don't have to believe any of that to actually be serving him in what you're doing. And so I think they are accidentally becoming more satanic than they even realized. They thought they were kind of trolling or playing a game or mocking Christianity through all this dark gothic type of imagery and all these strategic optical opportunities, publicity. But in reality, they are kind of offering human souls to the god of evil.
In your article, you talk about this pro-choice activism actually having potential to backfire on the Satanic Temple. How do you think this, you know, virtual abortion clinic will backfire on them? Because they've always been about pro-choice activism. They've always been pro-choice. So tell us about what you think could be potentially damaging to them about this.
Well, there's two ways it could backfire, and I think both of them are live candidates right now. One is their efforts to align abortion choice advocacy with satanic ritual abortion is they distance themselves. They create a divide between them and the wider abortion choice world. The rest of the abortion choice world doesn't necessarily want to affiliate with Satanism, and they don't want abortion to be affiliated, responsibly or not, with the idea of offering children to Satan. That just is very bad optics. So they risk marginalizing themselves from the rest of the pro-choice world. But besides the pro-choice harm that they can do for their own cause, they can also do it by empowering the pro-life cause, because we've been saying for years that abortion is effectively, or at least practically, the same as child sacrifice to Satan. And so they're kind of stepping on the rake that they made. They're embracing a pro-life objection, where we've been talking about scripture and its reference to child sacrifice in the Old Testament and how abominable it is, and how they were trying to worship Molech and Dagon and different false gods who are, from a Christian perspective, are roughly akin to demons or even different names for Satan. And all of that's horrific from a biblical perspective, but it was done for practical reasons: to increase the crop, to win a battle, to serve convenience concerns for the people. And so they were sacrificing their children to make their lives easier. And that's the same thing that many folks are doing abortion for today. And so the Christian objection, the Christian conservative objection that abortion choice is effectively Molech worship, they're kind of embracing that, whether they realize it or not. Now, there's an interesting story in C.S. Lewis in his book, The Last Battle, which is part of the Narnia series. And he describes these hucksters. It's an orangutan, I believe, and a donkey. And the orangutan is kind of clever, and he tries to trick people into thinking that he's Aslan. But he eventually ends up getting the support and playing as an alternative religion, Tash. And at one point, these two, led, instigated by the orangutan, they are led into a situation where they have to make good on their claims to be in contact with Tash. So they have to summon Tash. And they had a scheme worked out where they were going to fake it, and they're going to dance around and act like they're going to summon Tash, and then have some actors come in and pretend like they encountered Tash in the secret room or something. But lo and behold, they actually do summon Tash. And he's more terrifying than they could have imagined. And I don't think folks realize just how irreverent and foolish it is to claim this title of Satanism and to be doing things in the name of Satanism and Satan, and you don't really believe in Satan. The gameplay could be deluding themselves more than anybody else. And they risk summoning, they risk offering blood sacrifices to Satan, thinking that there's no literal Satan and they're just playing. Well, you don't have to believe in Satan to do his bidding. You don't have to worship knowingly Satan to be worshiping Satan, because you could always be doing it unknowingly. And I think that's where they're at. And effectively, it means they are empowering the pro-life cause here. So if I had to warn them, because I think there are some people who are identify with the Satanic Temple who are, I mean, I don't think that they're all necessarily evil, wicked, cold-hearted, recalcitrant. They could never be turned back to Christ. I don't think that. I'm sure there are some. But for those that are really trying to be reasonable, they were hurt, or whatever their story is, I would strongly encourage them that if they're trying to be pro-woman, if they're trying to be pro-science, pro-reason, compassion, and empathy, I think they need to walk back their identification with this pill abortion clinic, because they're pro-science, they're empathetic, and they're concerned for women.
Well, that's really interesting that you said that, because, you know, I want to know, because of those kinds of things that you just said, pro-woman, pro-science, and earlier you said they're all about empathy and reason. You know, how does this online pill abortion clinic fit in with their greater plans? Because actually, I might have mentioned this on a previous podcast. I'm not sure if everyone might have listened to that episode, but I did come across somebody who was a member of the Satanic Temple on social media and interacted with them very cordially. And one of the things that they really were about was they felt like the Satanic Temple did a lot of community service to help people who were homeless or different things like that in their neighborhood. And they didn't mention anything about, you know, abortion or anything. So, you know, how does this emphasis, I guess, on creating this virtual abortion clinic online fit into their larger plans?
Well, in their view, they're putting forward their ideals as it, and it happens to align very much with progressivism. So a lot of the LGBT stuff, abortion choice, separation of church and state more so than robust religious freedom. So a particular reading of how the First Amendment should be interpreted. They're being consistent with their past stance here. It's just, I think they're misinformed about pill abortion. And I think they're overplaying their hand because they want to kind of instigate this like a legal fight. I think they want to instigate a legal fight with pro-lifers who say, you're trying to offer babies to Satan. That's wicked. And I think they kind of are, but I don't think they think they are. And so anyway, I think what this translates into is they've got these stated aims, but because of misinformation, they're contradicting their own aims. So they're not even being consistent with themselves. So that makes effectively three different ways that they risk contradicting their purposes. One, they are separating themselves from the pro-choice world by using bad optics that the pro-choice world doesn't want affiliated with abortion. They're walking right into a classic, profound objection from Christian conservatives that abortion is Satan worship. And because of misinformation about the effectiveness of the abortion pill and the relative safety of it, they're actually putting women in harm's way and settling for bad science and misinformation and compromising their integrity regarding good reason, empathy, and compassion. And so they have reason to walk back this whole plan because otherwise they end up contradicting their own aims. So that's a threefold loss for them with this, I think, misguided abortion clinic.
Well, on a much lighter note than issues surrounding abortion, I have a fun question for you. I've been asking people on the podcast in January, when they look back at the end of the year in December 2024, please tell me one word to have hopefully characterized your year.
Hope. You use the word hopefully, but I've actually been thinking about this very question. Somewhere between hope and joy, as dark and dastardly as all this kind of study can be with satanic abortion clinics and pill abortion and mortality rates and health risks, it can be very depressing. But to contrast that, I actually do have a lot of hope and even a growing joy about what the future holds, not because I think everything is hunky-dory or I'm naive about it, but because the more I dig into these subject areas, the deeper I dig, the more I still find that the foundations of goodness and truth and beauty are still right where God left them. And the same sovereign who planted them is Lord over the garden ever since. And so I really do have a great deal of hope and joy. So you could say one word, hopeful joy, hyphenate it.
Well, thanks, John, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
And thank you for having me.
You've been listening to episode 375 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Dr. John Ferrer. He has written an online feature article for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called The Satanic Temple Abortion Clinic, A Critical Assessment. You can read John's article for free online at our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.